Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
My name is Emily Wildhaber, and today is Tuesday, April 25th, 2023. We're here at the Cass County Historical Society, and I'm sitting with... Go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Linda Kaiser, retired school administrator.
Linda, thank you for joining us.
But a former student in a one-room schoolhouse.
Yes, so tell us about that. Where did you go to school?
I went to HIT school. It was in Lafayette County.
Okay.
And Mrs. Bessie Fisher was our teacher. She was a grandmotherly type. Could not drive, so someone drove her to school, which meant we were in this building in the middle of nowhere off Highway 24 with no telephone and no transportation.
And you think about a teacher that couldn't drive.
That's right. And the closest place is about 1/8 mile away. We could go up to the run an apple orchard. We could go up there if we needed a phone, but we never did. We never had anyone break a bone or get really hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, we really didn't. And there was a ditch that went around the school. As you might guess, when the farmer donated the land, they always gave them the worst.
Sure.
I mean, why would you give your good crop land,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
And so there was a big ditch and timber, and we'd play down there. And I think, you know, now you can't leave your kids alone. And can you imagine being out of sight down in where there's poison ivy and snakes? And yeah, it's just a different, whole different world. But I got into it. Well, first of all, I went to HIT school. First grade, I was in fifth grade for a couple of weeks, and they moved me up to seventh grade. So I was in HIT school for those years, and then I went to a town school, which was Quarter, Missouri, because they closed HIT school. I was the school administrator here in Harrisonville, and Carol Bowl was on the board. And so we sat next to each other at board meetings. And I retired in 97. And she then became executive director of the Historical Society. So one day she called me up, and she said that they were concerned that people that attended one-room schoolhouses were dying, and if we didn't get something down, that it would be lost forever, and would I be interested in being involved in that project? And being stupid, I assumed she meant that there were a group of us that were going to do this.
Uh-oh.
And she invited me to come to a meeting. When I got there, I found out it was me. But I was very interested in doing that just because of my experience in attending school. And so what she wanted me to do is gather pictures and artifacts and interview people. And she directed me downstairs to what you have here. And I started looking through the materials, and I thought, you know, we need to get the names of kids down someplace where they can be researched. You know, there were all these records filled out by the district clerk with the name of the student and age. And not all schools had them. I mean, some were lost. And I thought, we need to do something with this. So I went up and talked to her about it, and she said, well, she really didn't expect me to do that, because that would be a big project. And I said, well, I think it needs to be done, and I'm willing to attempt it. And she was gracious enough. And initially, I would come in and work. Well, you know, at the time I drove in, and I was wasting a lot of time, so I asked her if I could check it things out and take them home. And she said, yeah, she trusted me with the material, bless her heart. And so I took them home, and now you realize I'm on the farm. And my husband died in 2005, and we needed desperately to replace fences. So in the spring and fall, I built fences, but the rest of the time, I worked on the school project. And I literally did like office hours. I would start working at the computer at 8 o'clock until noon and 1 to 5 all winter long in the very heat of the summer in order to get that done. Took 4 years. And then I, in the meantime, I also located people and interviewed and gathered photographs, and most of these little towns had a little history book, and researched those and incorporated that information into the book. And what I found was the experiences that I had in the country school was pretty typical of here. There were potluck suppers, and the school was the center of the social life in the community. Some schools had more playground equipment than others, depending on how much money they had. The teachers often were women until they got married. Of course, then they got kicked out, which is what happened. My brother's teacher had to quit because she got married.
They only wanted single women.
Mm-hmm. I don't know quite what the problem was. but, you know, women pretty well took over the elementary school. And it always amazed me that we still have people think that it's a demotion if you teach younger kids, and it's a promotion if you go to the older kids. And I maintain the hardest job of any educator is the kindergarten. Mm. And the most important job, because the first year of a kid's life in school probably does a lot to foretell what the future has to hold. But it was interesting in talking to people. Now, I realize when you look back, you forget about all the negatives, you remember the positives, right? How positive everybody I interviewed was about their educational experience. They thought it, they got a good education, and it was, their teachers were wonderful, and so on. Part of that maybe is forgetfulness, but I also think there's a closeness. There were 19 kids in my class, and there were 7 first graders, 2 girls and 5 boys. I was one of the older ones, and the girl was one of the younger ones. And we only started first grade every other year. So she was just barely over 4, and I was pushing 7. but that was one way of helping the teacher, so she wouldn't have 8 grades. Mm-hmm. She could only have 4. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to the poor kid that moved in the wrong grade level. they just put you where they thought you ought to be. And that's what happened to me. I was in time I got to 5th grade, there was only 2 boys and myself, and the boys were not interested in education. And I still don't understand why we accept and expect boys to be not interested in school, and that girls are achievers and boys aren't. I mean, we see that yet today. And so she just put me in the next grade that was available, which was the 7th grade.
Did you do well there?
did fine. The biggest problem came when I got to high school and everybody else is 2 years older than I. Mm-hmm. And it'd probably be more of a problem today than it was in those days, because we were a small community and we knew everybody and, you know, no big deal. Now I think there may be more of an issue with that. But I went to quarter then my eighth grade year, and there, I mean, it was a small school and they had seventh and eighth grade in one room. And then I moved, my dad retired, we moved to Warrensburg, and then I hit a big school. Well, it was big to me because it was 55 my high school graduation. It was big to me. But it did fine. In the little country school, teachers really adjusted the material to the kids, more so than we do now, I think. Because in going through interviews and reading, I would find, you know, that for some kids, high school was not possible because they lived in the country and there was no transportation. And if the kids went to high school often, it was the girls, because the boys stayed home to do chores and the girls could board often with some widow lady in town and go to high school. But there are plenty of instances where the child continued to attend the one-room schoolhouse, although they finished the eighth grade, and the teacher just provided material for them at the high school level and kept them there until, as you might guess, the state decided that wasn't possible and stopped it, forcing them to go to high schools. The school buildings were very much the same because before the Civil War, there were log cabins. And of course, during the Civil War, well, especially in this area, the Oregon 11, the buildings deteriorated, burned down. And often buildings burned down because they heated with the fireplace. So after the Civil War, the governor pushed a project to provide funding for school buildings. And the buildings all looked alike because that was what was handed down. And so the HIT school I went to is very similar to the schools, one of the schools around here. And we didn't have textbooks. The teacher, we did much of our spelling and math on the blackboard. This is a lot of blackboards. And you heard the material over and over again, obviously, because we had no library. So you just sat at your desk and you're supposed to be quiet while the teacher was working with one of the groups. And so if you had fractions when you were in the fifth grade, well, when you hit the next grade, you heard the fifth graders have fractions again. You can learn it again. If you didn't get it the first time, you got it the second time. Or she'd have you work with other kids. Maybe work with younger kids, listen to read or something. So the teacher used all her resources. I also think it's really strange, setting at board meetings and the minutes, you know, where every bill had to be noted and, you know, all this stuff. Well, if you look through the archives, you don't see many board minutes. And most of those meetings were very informal and never got written down. And the parents came and cleaned the school up before school started. I mean, the community did those things. You didn't hire people people volunteered because the school was important. And of course, we lost that with consolidations, and we're so much more mobile now. It's just a whole different thing. And in some ways, we have many, you know, now we have speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. We have plenty of art and music, and we have more field trips, and we have audiovisual materials and computers, all those things where are positives, but the negative is the lack of relationships. Because after all, that one-room schoolhouse teacher, just like I said, once the kids got there, she had them until she sent them home. Mm-hmm. There was not another teacher come and take her class over while she had free time. And so there was, that teacher became almost a mother to the kids. In fact, I can remember kids calling me Mom. And that's strange for sixth graders to come up and call you Mom, you know. And they would be embarrassed when they realized what they had done. Mm-hmm. But the whole atmosphere was different. In interviewing, I talked to them about what kind of games they played, and the same kind of games that we played when I went in another county, which I bet you if you went across the country, you'd find that over and over again. So I'm not sure you'll find much difference between one-room schoolhouses. Mm. There are a few schools in Cass County that were brick, but very few. I can't remember the name of the school, but they had moved their school several times, which is not unusual. If the population was, you know, off-center, they'd move the school there versus having the kids walk. And so they had to have a new building, and they had a brick building so they would not have to move it again. That was the consensus, which is sort of interesting that people think of that kind of thing. I think there's a school around Midway that's rock, and I think there's a brick building. There's a brick building south here and one by Pleasant Hill. But I think that's the only brick buildings that there were. Most are wood with a little porch and a little cloakroom. Mm-hmm. McEwen, are you familiar with McEwen? At McEwen, they have a one-room schoolhouse.
Okay.
It was Rockford, which was west of town. Mm-hmm. It's in much better shape. It looks very nice compared to what we, you know, our schools look like. It was not unusual for the hogs to be underneath the building. It wasn't unusual to have to send the kids home because a skunk got in the building or the kids got sprayed and brought the smell to school, and it wasn't tolerable to have them in the building kind of thing. The teachers did different worries than,
sure.
than they do now, you know.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't unusual for, and I think it'd be crazy to think about today's age, but if the older brother and sister was at school, the mom and dad wanted to go to town, didn't want to fool with their four-year-old kid, they'd just drop off and he would go in and be with his brothers and sisters in school and fine. And I can remember, you know, country schools got out earlier than the town schools, and my cousins were in town schools. They envied me a lot. But I remember going, when my school was out, visiting my cousins in their school.
Yeah.
And no one said anything. I assure you, a teacher would complain if you did that to her now. Could I bring my four-year-old sister in today? So it's different that way. But the experience was really good. I had no, when I said I would do it, I had no idea that it was going to be a four-year project. I'll have to admit that. That was sort of a shock. And I could have gone on and tried to get more interviews. I told Carol, though, it has to end sometime. So I think this is it. And I don't think she had any idea what it would end up being, and I certainly didn't.
So we've got it here. Can you tell for the recording what the final product was?
It was 6 volumes, and what I did is divided the county into sectors. So there was a northwest, northeast, southwest, southeast, central, and somehow the people that were publishing it left out one area, so that became a lone book on its own.
Lone volume.
On its own volume. So it turned out to be 6 volumes. And they did a good job of indexing it, so you can, if you had a name in mind, you go into the book and look the name up and tell you what page to turn to and find it, which I think could be very helpful. And it's also interesting how many files showed up that we didn't know about. For instance, Carol got a call from a lady someplace in mid-Kansas, I remember the town, but her folks had bought the house in the 30s, and various members of the family have lived in it, but now they got to the point that they were selling the property, and so they were cleaning it out. And they found a bunch of district clerk school records in the attic, and they had no idea how they were there, mm-hmm. or why they were there. And so she got them to us. In another case, one of my students called me. Her dad had been on the school board, and she had found a bunch of district clerk records and shared them with me. And of course, I advised them to donate them to the, because it means nothing to anybody else, you know. In fact, a lot of people that had pictures said, well, you'll just keep them because my kids don't mean nothing to them. They'll just throw them away. And one was very interesting. It was a school, the Bybee School, and evidently, from the time it was established until it was closed, a member of that family had been on the board. Which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so there were 2 bachelor uncles who then passed away, and they had an estate sale. And there was a box of stuff, and this guy just bought it. And when he looked into it, it was what minutes they had. I mean, it was the whole school thing. They had saved it, because there's always some, you know, grandfather was in it, and the, you know, father and so on, different members of the family. So they had the whole record there of that school from the time it started until they closed. And I'm sure there are more records out there. Well, I know one lady told me she was a district clerk. And she said, well, she just gave those records out to people for souvenirs when they closed the school.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, what they did with them, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But the district clerk, you know, pretty well kept the records. And I know there was one case, the guy was hired, and they got paid $5 sometimes. That obviously was illiterate, mm-hmm. and you could not decipher his minutes. And I thought he must have really had, because the parents in the community voted, so they had to know each other. You know, mm-hmm. They must have known that he didn't have skills, but he must have been seen as a responsible person to assign him that task.
I thought
that was really weird, because if I couldn't, I wouldn't have taken the job, you know. But he did. Now, maybe he needed the money, or he wanted to, you know, have that status, needed that, or whatever, but he did it anyway. But I thought, that's tough. That's the only way to put it. It's just tough.
So you said you sat down and you interviewed people about their...
their experience.
Their experiences. Did you record that or take notes or?
Yeah, the summaries are in the book. Recordings, and I thought about that the other day, and I wondered if I guess I had those recordings at my house. Probably, I need to look at that. I'm sure I do. I don't think I gave the recordings to Carol. I think I just gave her the written material. I think I gave her the recordings. I look at that.
Those would be something worth preserving, for sure.
I interviewed former teachers as well as students. One of them, part of her job was required to pick the kids up and take them to school on her way to school. A lot of the young women that were teaching lived with their parents, and in a number of cases, Dad would go in and start the fire for her, and sometimes the dad then drove her to school because she wasn't allowed to drive. And I know one, the water quality wasn't good at the school, and she had to take a cream jug of water to school every day, so they have fresh water that was health certified, so to speak. They had to, of course, you know, take care of the heating of the building and cleaning of the building, and sometimes they got paid and sometimes they didn't, and sometimes the teachers would hire an eighth grade boy to do the janitorial work. Now, the school I went to, we had a coal shed, and then the building, and of course the outhouses were on the opposite side for the boys and the girls. When I was a first grader, I was in the outhouse and it fell over on me. it fell.
A windy day, or
I just know it fell. And what was so grateful was Mrs. Slusher was walking down the hill toward the outhouse, and of course she was a grandmother. I mean, she was in her 60s, and we were so grateful that it was Linda that was in the outhouse and not Mrs. Slusher, because she may have hurt herself. I just know it fell over. I don't remember why, because that seems really strange. And I know every once in a while the boys would lock people in the outhouse, not let them out, kind of thing. And one of the things I always loved about the country school was, I always wanted to do this, is ring that school bell. And so whenever, so she did that at the beginning of the day and when recess was over, and I would always try to locate myself close enough and see if I could ring the school bell. And the other thing is the privilege of racing the blackboard and going out and pounding the erasers to get the dust out of them. I probably was a teacher pleaser, because some people would see that as a chore and a task, but I saw that as
an honor.
Yes, it's an honor. And when I retired, the district gives out the school bell, each retiree, so I got my own school bell.
Now you can ring it anytime you please.
Anytime I want. But, you have to admire the teachers in those days, the responsibility. In some cases, the students were almost as old as the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, for instance, finished the fourth grade at the age of 16.
Mm.
He was the oldest boy, and he was expected to help with the farm. But he was sharp as a tack. My brother and I, it was really funny. One time he asked how many bushels of grain would go to that grain bin. And of course, Marv and I got our paper and pencil. Dad didn't use paper and pencil. But they did more memory work
mm-hmm.
in those days because you didn't waste paper.
Mm-hmm.
You used every bit of paper. You know, now the kids put one line on the paper and they throw it away. Well, no, you used the whole thing, the Big Chief.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the Big Chief tablet?
No.
Oh, yeah, everybody had a Big Chief tablet. And Dick and Jane and Spot and Puff reading material. And I have you know, I learned to read out of that book. And my children all learned to read out of that, which means that was around a long time. And now we have to change our reading series every 5 years for some reason. And I don't know that it's really necessary. It's a lot of money, and maybe we should be using the money. You know, I could see some subject materials need to be changed because
sure.
of new advancements, but I'm not sure a reading book needs to be changed.
Sure.
If you write it that's generic and you don't have to throw it out and get a new book.
Mm-hmm.
But we do.
So when you were interviewing people, who was the oldest people that you interviewed? Like, when would they have been going to school?
There were people in their 80s when I interviewed them, and some in pretty poor health.
Mm.
I don't know that I interviewed a number of teachers, and they really were older.
On the teachers, did you interview any of them? I know you mentioned that the girls would still live at home.
Mm-hmm.
Did you interview any of them who lived or in the community with the families? Like, they used to. That was
yes.
how it was
yes.
originally, but I didn't
yes.
know if in this time frame they were still doing
that. I didn't interview anyone that did that,
okay.
No. They all, the girls lived with Mom and Dad.
Okay.
Pretty, like 100% of the time,
okay.
You know, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed a number of students that went to high school by being boarded
mm-hmm.
in town. Mom and Dad would bring them in Sunday night and come and get them Friday night and
mm-hmm.
go home. But this is correct. That was part of your salary
mm-hmm.
by living. Either living with one family that was close to school or rotating among the families.
Mm.
I know this this brothers and sister, and they lived here, and the school was just right next door. And so, you know, he said he would go home at noon with his gun, go out and shoot a rabbit for supper. But they said they had a city lady come down to teach. And she slept at their house,
mm-hmm.
and her room was the sofa in the living room. That's
no.
what that was her. And she didn't last long. I said, she decided that wasn't for her, which it surprised me because I always assumed they had a room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how backward thinking I was because people didn't have extra bedrooms for guests. But she had to sleep on the sofa in the living room, and as I said, she didn't last very long.
So, were there any stories from people that anything really wild or anything that really stuck with you?
Well, there's some things that happened to me that I think were interesting. Miss Flusher was my teacher all the way through elementary school. And as a first grader, she had us come up. And as I said, there were 19 of us in class. And she had us put our hand down on a piece of paper, and she drew. And we asked her why. So she did a collecting of hands, she said. I'm just doing a collection of hands. When Christmas came, she had knitted each of us a pair of gloves.
Aww.
That's special. And of course, at Christmas time, the guy that played the Santa Claus was Harold Curtis. He was a bachelor and a large man. And everybody knew it was Harold, you know. But he played Santa Claus every year. He didn't have kids in school or anything, but he was there playing. He and his sister lived on the farm. And he would dress up as Santa Claus and give out. And of course, the big deal, and it always amazed me because as a teacher, we did the same thing. It was not a big deal to the current population. But when I was a kid, to get a little sack of candy and an apple or orange was fantastic. And then when I became a sixth grade teacher and we did the same thing, it was no big deal to the kids. You know. But it was a big deal when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It was something you look forward to. And the teacher gave you a... And I don't know, I guess probably oranges weren't all that available maybe in those days. To get an orange was something special, special, special. Mm-hmm. Schools often had several names. I don't know if you've talked about that. Sometimes three or four different names in their life of the school. Often they were named after the farm that was closest, you know, that Brown's farm, because Brown's were next door kind of thing. And some were really crazy names and have no idea where they came up with them. And there was a fight over little country schools. That's what happened to my school, and it's happened here too. Hitt School had money, had reserves, because we didn't spend all her money. So Waverly and Quarter were the town schools, which are small towns, but they wanted to consolidate with Hitt School because money. And so they were buying for us. And so Waverly installed a phone in our building that last year. And there was a fight between the people that wanted to go to Waverly, the families, and those that wanted to go to Quarter. And there were hurt feelings about that. And it went to court, and we went to Quarter because that was the closest to me. And at the end of my sophomore in high school, which means, 3 years, the court case is finally resolved, and Waverly got it. By that time, we moved to Warrensburg, so I didn't have to change schools. You know, Midway, that was a mess because it was Cleveland, Westline, and Freeman. And they tried to pass the bond issue, and it passed on the 11th vote. It failed by one or two votes over and over and over. And so the health department closed Freeman. Not convenient. Then they decided Cleveland did not have it was a two-story building, and their top floor was not safe, fire and so on. So that became a questionable building, and they already closed West Line, and they had to reopen West Line. They had gotten the high school built, but when they tried to do something with the elementary, that's where the issue was, and that's where we had the 11 votes before. They reopened West Line, and that's where Eddie went to school first grade. And I guess by that time they had kids on the stage, they're all over the place at Midway because they had to find rooms for them because buildings. Mm-hmm. And so then it passed.
Okay.
That's how you do it. And actually the little country schools, there's one in Peculiar, it was really strange. You know, if you didn't have very many students, for instance, your population was low, you said, well, okay, we'll just close our school and we'll pay tuition to send the kids to wherever. And this particular school decided, well, we're just going to annex ourselves to Peculiar because, you know, our population's down, da-da-da. And they voted to do that. And then until they realized what the levy was. And so they voted to reopen the school because they didn't want the taxes to be paid. Isn't that interesting?
That
the bottom
interesting.
Line.
Yeah.
The bottom line. But they would maybe have school for several years and or not have school. I know that the school that's close to me at home, Crook was on the board. He was president of the board. And that year they only had four kids. And, you know, it just wasn't feasible mm-hmm. to do that. And so they decided to close the school mm-hmm. and consolidate with Freeman. And then over the summer, a bunch of families moved in. And they were very upset with him because he had pushed for the closing of the school and said, if you just waited. So
did they stay consolidated with Freeman or did they reopen?
They stayed closed. They didn't even have playground equipment. They were a very poor school. Mm-hmm. My neighbors, the Goddards, the two boys, they were students there, and the Green family, their kids went there too, and so I interviewed them, and Gene Goddard said, we were so poor. He said, we used limbs for bats, and, mm. you know, we didn't have no playground equipment, no nothing, and, Dewey Crook said he, you know, he just thought that was the best thing to do, and
mm-hmm.
and people moved in over, and so you know, and even now, you know, the population goes up and down. Mm-hmm. You have a community of children, and the children grow up, and leave, and now there's a reduction in enrollment, and then as those people move out, or die, whichever. Then young families move in, now your population goes up. So, mm-hmm. and that happened in those days too. Yep. But you know, they decided every April what their school term was going to be like. The state only mandated a minimum. Mm. And you could have school longer if you wanted to. And some did. And some didn't because of the cost. But teachers often would like to go to the school that had the longer term because they got paid more. And you understand, teachers negotiated with the board.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why often women got the job versus the male, because the male wanted more money.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was a tight board, they would do that. But yeah, you may have initially 6 months, well, way back when it was 4 months, but the bulk of the time it was 6 months. But some districts had 7 months school, and then eventually it went to 8 months. And that's my time, it was 8 months. And the town schools had 9 months. So we went to school after Labor Day and got out in April. But initially, you know, school was just a few months long because often farmers or preachers taught school. And they did that after harvest and before planting. Then as time went on, they added time. And then the state would mandate. That's how we got to 9 months.
Sure.
That's how we got to transportation and how we got to feeding kids at lunch and how we got to how many courses would be offered and what the content would be and so on.
So if you were to do this project again, would you do anything different or?
I don't think so.
Do you plan to do anything more with it? Is there a volume 7 coming?
No. I'm not planning on doing anything more. I don't think I would have done anything differently. I'm sort of an organizer, and so I can see that. My husband would go out and work on machinery, these tools, and he'd put them in a bucket and use the tools and leave them in the bucket. Not me. I have to pick it up and put it back where it belongs. And so that sort of lend my talent to that because I could organize it and get it so it's something usable. And I'm glad I did it. I never regretted even starting it. I just thought it was funny because when Carol invited me, I just knew I was going to be a group of people of us and we're going to divide this work up. And then when I got here, it was Linda.
Well, sometimes too many cooks can spoil the pot.
I never like working in groups. Yeah. You know, you college classes where they have a group. There's always one person that wants to do it all because they don't trust anybody else. And there's always somebody that doesn't want to do a darn thing but just wants a good grade out of it. And I never like group projects, never. They're not fun at all. You have to rely on other people. I know in curriculum class one time a professor gave us a job of writing a curriculum for the future. And we decided that we were going to write a curriculum teaching mind communication. Instead of talking, we were going to teach kids how to mental. And that's exactly right. We had one person there that wanted to do every little bit and didn't want nobody to touch it. And of course, a male didn't want nothing to do with it. He didn't lift a finger. It was funny because a teacher wrote that, says, I think some people didn't do much on this.
Well, Linda, do you have anything else you want to share with us about your research or what you learned or the history of the schools around here?
Except I think people got a good education. And of course, in those days, kids were allowed to be kids, and not necessarily doing that these days. And I'm sure there were kids, well, you know, handicapped kids didn't go to school at all. You just didn't send them. Mm-hmm. If you had a child that was mentally handicapped, you just didn't send them. And, you know, like Einstein, the school couldn't support him, so they kicked him out of school. Mm-hmm. So you didn't deal with fragile people. Sometimes I don't think we deal with them very well yet, but but yeah, I think this one-room schoolhouse brought a community together and educated kids, and for its time, it was good.
Wonderful.
Well, we are eternally grateful that you did these. You use these on a regular basis. So thank you very much, Linda, for doing this.
I have people call and say, I think my mother taught, or did she go to school? You know, could you look up for me kind of thing. So.